This is Indie Book Publishing. Indie Book Publishing is a show about new books and the authors who wrote them. It's an opportunity for prospective readers to hear directly from the writers, to hear what inspired them to write and publish, and to hear all the inside details about their books. And now, Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing Crossbooks. This is J. Douglas Barker. Our book today is titled Reliant, A 28-Day Journey to Draw Closer to God. And our author, joining me from the Northwest near Seattle, Washington, Kellyanne Bowman. Welcome, Kellyanne.
Thank you.
Good to visit with you. Your book is a relatively short read, 124 pages. Would you describe this as a devotional? Would you describe it as a journal expression? How would you describe your book?
So I would really describe it as both. It's a devotional journal. My heart behind it is that it would take about 5 to 7 minutes whenever somebody decided that that was the right time for them to get together with God. I normally do it in the morning, but everybody has a different rhythm for their day. And so in it, I've provided the scripture reference. And then really each section or each devotion is just how that particular scripture spoke to my heart and how God used it in my journey. And then I wanted to leave a space so that it was interactive, so that people could write down how they were responding to that particular scripture and then whatever part of my story that I shared. So it really is both a devotional and a journal.
Did your journey begin in November of 2011, or was that just a milestone that started you writing and thinking on a different path?
Yeah, it was a huge mile marker in my life. I grew up in a family where I knew God's presence. I became a Christian when I was 14, but I didn't give my life fully and 100% over to God until November of 2011. And then at that point, I just started really devouring the Word and spending lots of time in prayer. And I started to journal more. And then out of that journal came a blog that I had been writing. And then a couple years later came the book Reliant.
Describe the specific incidents. Was it just a good church service that motivated you, or was there something else, a life crisis perhaps, that got you started?
Yeah, in December of 2008, my mom passed away suddenly, and my mom was the center of my world. I was a single mom at the time, and my mom had retired a few years earlier, and so she was the primary caregiver of my daughter and myself. Really, she did everything, cook, clean, bills, laundry, all of it. She was amazing. And she had an aneurysm and died suddenly in December of 2008. And I just kind of spiraled a little bit after that and felt like God was really absent and that I didn't want anything to do with him because I just felt like he was ruining my life, and I could do better than he could. And so a couple years later, I just was in dark despair, really, and I had some heart issues, some health issues. And I was laying in bed like, God, I really need you to fix this health issue that I've got. And he was really clear for me and just said, I want your life. And so until you're willing to give me your life, I'm not just going to fix. This isn't just going to be a quick remedy. And so at that moment, I got scared, and I said, okay, fine, you can have my whole life. And that was November of 2011. And it's been an amazing journey since then. He's released me from alcoholism and just bad people that I was hanging around. I walked away from alcohol. I haven't had a drop since November of 2011. I cut people out of my life that were not going to be good for me, and I just gave him everything. And so it's just been tremendous ever since then.
A radical change for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I am, it's 100% all God. And it's just been an amazing, amazing journey, just getting closer to him. I recently just walked away from a 25-year healthcare career and am starting a nonprofit organization that's just focused on the community and feeding those who need fed and bringing people together and helping people meet needs of folks. And it's been awesome. And so I'm really excited. Every day is amazing.
That's an incredible story as you've described it. When you began to write this and share your particular journey, did you include a lot of personal anecdotal things in your writing, or is it all scripturally based and totally focused in that direction?
It's really it's my story. It's how those different scripture passages helped me walk through life and get to a place where I could give my life completely to God and become reliant. My website is inextricably reliant, because that word inextricably means that there's no way to tear it apart. Those things that are connected can never be disconnected. And that is how I feel about God, that I've already walked away from Him. I will never do it again. And I just want to help other people be reliant on this God who loves them incredibly more than they can ever fully grasp. And that when life gets challenging, instead of walking away, which is our natural tendency, how about we flip that and we just press in and we hang on and we say, I'm not letting go until you bless me. And you're going to have to carry me through this, God, because I can't do it on my own. And so that's really my heart, is to just help people get to that place.
You've described it this way. I've traded the question, how can I numb this pain, for how can I help show them you will heal their pain if they'll just turn to you? Very different life I have now,
yeah.
One that is infinitely better than the one I had. There's absolutely no comparison. When you wrote this, what did you want to accomplish with sharing your story?
I want people to see that God is worth trusting, that when we reach a rock bottom, it's typically because we've walked away from God, and it's not because God has sent us to a rock bottom. He's always with us, and he's always, I mean, his character from Genesis through Revelation is, I'm always here for you. I just need you to trust me and to follow me. And I really just want people to get to that place where they accept that. And that doesn't mean life isn't challenging. Life is challenging every day. There's no promise that it won't be. But man, when you've got the God of the universe on your side and his strength and his Holy Spirit, there is nothing that you can't do. And he will get you through all of it.
Kellyanne, any significance to the 28-day journey to draw closer to God? You could have written 45, 100, 150, 365. Why 28?
Well, every month has 28 days. And so I wanted to make it, I am a super linear, pattern-oriented person. And so, honestly, the 28 days is because I thought, well, you could always start at the first of any month and carry through at least 28 days. And so really that is the only reason for the 28-day piece. It just worked for my brain.
So you're not encouraging someone to take a couple, 3 days off?
Right. It's just, and even, you know, even for other folk, if you get to a day that it just really strikes you like, wow, I just need to kind of meditate and marinate in that particular day, then pick it back up when you're ready. 28 days in particular had no particular significance, other than it just made a little bit of sense to me.
Well, describe to my listeners in a couple of sentences or paragraphs. I think you've done a great job so far, but just if you were talking to them on the street corner and they found out you had written the book Reliant, how would you describe this to them? Get them interested in getting their own personal copy for their own journey.
I would say to anybody that we all face challenges, and life is never easy, and we all have moments, and typically, if from my experience, we all have multiple moments where we can decide that God is worth trusting, even though the circumstances don't look like it, or that we're just going to go alone. And my heart and the purpose of this book is to help people see that I have certainly done that along with millions of other people. I've gone it alone. And I've said to God, I don't want to trust you. I think you're not as good as you think you are. And then I've ended up in really dark places that I could have avoided if I had just trusted him in the first place. And so I just want people to see that he is worth trusting. And so all of these stories in here and all of these devotions are really about how we can do that, how he's shown in his word, in our lives, and in so many stories that he is worth trusting and he is worth being relied upon, and to just give that a try, because trying to go it on our own never works. So how about let's try to pour a little bit more faith into God and just wait and watch and see what he'll do, because he will amaze us in every single day if we'll let him.
Kellyanne, I have a chicken or egg question. Did the blog come first or the book come first as far as writing?
The blog came first.
Blog came first.
The blog came first.
So you just went to the shelf, picked off a few things that you'd already written, and threw it into a book. Didn't take you any time at all.
I want to say it took about maybe a couple months to go through those that I had already written and tweak them and pull out the ones that I really felt had the strongest message and really showed reliance and reliance upon God. And then put them together. So, yeah, I wasn't starting from scratch by any stretch. These were things that were already written, and I just needed to adapt them to book style from blog style.
You'd already scratched that particular subject matter.
Yes.
Oh, yes, yes. There must have been some challenges. Even doing a blog, how often do you participate in that? Is it a weekly or a monthly or a daily? How did you decide on that format?
So in the beginning, it was... I think it was weekly or maybe every other week. And now I have the blog and I have a Facebook fan page. And on both of those, on the fan page and Facebook, I write 3 to 5 devotions a week.
Incredible.
And really, those come from my own personal quiet time with God. I get up very early every morning so that I have about an hour to an hour and a half every day in quiet time with God. And I'm reading his word, and I do a lot of writing out of the Bible. So different chapters in the Bible, I start to write them out in a journal. And sometimes a verse will just hit me like, oh man, that is a great nugget. That is huge. And I just will write a devotion about it. And it comes very naturally, it's just completely God-inspired, which is awesome.
Your book then is specifically targeted towards those who have a relationship with God in one capacity or another, or those who may be seeking. Would that describe it properly?
Yeah, I think it probably closer aligns with people who already have some type of relationships with God, more than somebody who's truly seeking, like I have no relationship with God whatsoever. Though it could appeal to them as well, because it just talks about how to build that kind of relationship. But really, I think it's probably more geared to the people who have had a relationship with him and have turned away or are thinking that he's not worth trusting based on something that's happening in their lives at right that moment.
Title of the book is Reliant, A 28-Day Journey to Draw Closer to God. Our author, Kellyanne Bowman. Kellyanne, where can my listeners get a copy of Reliant?
It's available on Amazon or crossbooks.com. I think it's also available on barnesandnoble.com.
Share your blog site again, please.
It's www.inextricablyreliant.com. Or there's a Facebook fan page with that same. So facebook.com/inextricablyreliant.
Thank you so much, Kellyanne, for joining me today. Is there another book in the future? Are you going to be drawing from your other blog entries and doing a sequel to this book, Reliant?
Yeah, actually, I'm working on a 365-day devotional, but it's a prayer devotional, and it'll really be meant more for that kind of book that sits on your bedside, and in the morning, before you launch out into your day, you open it up, you read some scripture, and then I'll have a short prayer. It's written in that just to start a conversation with God. And it really is not drawing from what I've already written as much as Reliant did. So it'll take a little bit more time to get done, but I'm excited. I love this journey. I love writing. And, yeah, so I'm excited.
Would love to visit with you when that also is released. Kellyanne is spelled, it's all one word, Kellyann, last name, Bowman. So those of you who are searching online can find Reliant and anything that's published in the future. Thank you, Kellyanne, for joining me today. For Indie Book Publishing Crossbooks, this is J. Douglas Parker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Congratulations on being the proud owner of an adorable, soft, cuddly, sweet-smelling, smiling, cooing, hungry, tired, gassy, screaming little bundle of joy. So now what? Where's the owner's manual for this thing? Where are my instructions? Right here. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Infant care specialist Blythe Lipman has worked with babies for over 20 years and works extensively with new parents, providing workshops, in-home visits, tips, and daily phone calls to ease those frazzled nerves. With Baby and Toddler Instructions, you can get the advice you need on how to survive and enjoy your baby's first year. For more information on Blythe and how she can help you, go to babyinstructions.com. From 32 ways to stop a baby from crying, to 14 ways to get a baby to eat, and so much more. It's Baby and Toddler Instructions with Blythe Lipman on TogiNet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Greetings for Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press. This is J. Douglas Barker. The book is titled Just Maggie, and our author, Virginia Burton Stringer, joins me from St. Petersburg, Florida. Welcome to the program today.
Thank you very much, Jay. I appreciate your time.
This is a fascinating book. When I first saw the cover, I must admit to you, I thought, well, we've got a 10 or 15 page book, but I was wrong. 342 pages. The book is sort of geared towards middle readers, from what I understand. Share with me the story. What is and who is Maggie?
Well, Maggie is a little girl. She's a princess. She's a somewhat impetuous little princess. And the story begins on her 13th birthday. Her actual name is Princess Melania Abigail Alice Grace, thus the name Maggie. And I chose those names because Melania is actually the ancient spelling of my daughter Melanie's name. And then Abigail is my granddaughter, Alice is my other daughter, and Grace is my other granddaughter.
Wow.
So since Maggie is a little bit of a combination of all four of their delightful personalities, I decided to sort of give a little nod to them and call her Maggie.
Wonderful idea. I have, I guess I'd have some very complex names if I assembled all of my grandkids and children's names into one piece. You've done a masterful job of this. You are actually, or have been, a playwright. You've written a play in the back in your past. This book, was it originally designed to be a book, or did you also think of doing this in a play form or in a theatrical form?
Well, when I started the project in 2004, due to a little bit of an empty nest situation, my oldest daughter had just graduated college, moved off to New York. My younger daughter had gone back to college for her junior year and would soon be flying the coop. And so as my medium had always been children's theater, and I've been a director and an actor and a writer for children's theater, I thought, well, this will be a 50-minute children's play. And then I started writing it, and, I kind of got the idea because of my experience raising daughters, watching my son raise his two daughters, and the whole idea of milestones in young women's lives, 13, 16, 18, 21, are major milestones in my opinion and from my experience. And so I thought, okay, I will write this story about an impetuous little princess, and this will be an adorable little play for children on stage. I realized very quickly that I actually had more stage directions and description of the set than I did dialogue. So I said, okay, well, maybe this is a short story. And maybe something like, a children's weekly reader or a children's magazine will pick it up and publish it because it'll be a nice little short story. About 150 pages in, I said, no, I guess this is not a short story, and this is not going to end anytime soon.
So, wow.
That's what led it to become an actual book, and in fact, the first book in a chapter book series.
Incredible.
So, Yeah, so there you have it.
The creative process, do you journal? Did you sit down? You didn't sit down with a storyline to begin with, and you actually had some stage direction, and that was the purpose of what you began to write, and it just took on a life of its own. Did the story do the same?
The story did the same, exactly. And I, you know, when I was writing it, to me it was more like it was revealing itself to me. I was not sitting there thinking, well, let's see, where should she go from here? What should I do with this? How should I? And in fact, the initial book that I had put together took another turn and another life when I, just by happenstance, got back in touch with a friend of mine from high school. His name is Mick Mahone, and he lives in Richmond, Virginia, where I went to high school. He has a master's degree in English, is a poet, is a songwriter, delightful person. We hadn't seen each other in 40 years. This is a little bit of a long story, but anyway, we happened to reconnect on Facebook, of all things, and found out he was actually coming down, so I said, oh, you got to stop by and meet my husband and spend some time with us. He did. He read the book, and he gave me some of the most incredible little golden nuggets of suggestion as to what he as a reader wanted to know more about. And when he did that, that was in about 2010 or 2011, when he did that, suddenly the entire world opened and Maggie's whole life took another turn. And suddenly I was writing in three different books at one time.
Amazing.
And suddenly, it couldn't stop at her being 13 or even 14 or 15 or even 16 and now not even 17 or 18. The last book in the series so far, she is 21.
Incredible.
So, yeah, it really took on its own life and it led me into a 10-year journey of the most fun I have had ever, I think. It was such joy sitting down and letting this story reveal itself to me and come to me and watching this little girl that just came out of my head, watching her grow up. So, yeah, to say it took a life of its own really is an understatement.
That's a great backdrop to the story, Just Maggie. Share with my listeners, where does the story take place? What is the time frame that it encompasses?
Well, it takes place long ago and far away in some mythical, magical place called Berencenia in the Commonwealth of Realms. There are several other kingdoms within the Commonwealth of Realms, and of course, with all good stories, there is an evil empire of Terrasicus and an evil emperor. But he kind of came along a little bit later on. But it starts with Maggie, who has grown up without her mother, becoming somewhat spoiled by her dear, sweet, doting, elderly father, King Henry. And because of it, she is prone to temper tantrums. She knows she can have anything she wants if she stomps her foot and screams loudly enough. And so this is what she does. So the book begins on Maggie's 13th birthday when she throws a gigantic temper tantrum because she can't have Spumoni ice cream for breakfast.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. And it only gets worse from there when her birthday party in the afternoon just goes completely sideways. And she throws another temper tantrum, starts a food fight, and then completely ruins all the magician's tricks. And so King Henry just says, okay, I've had enough. You're going to bed. Thank you for coming, everyone. Sends all the kids home. She doesn't open her presents. She goes to bed, and there's actually a beautiful illustration in the book of her pouting in bed with all of her presents piled at the foot of her bed. And King Henry realizes this is not the future queen of this realm. And what we then find out is that she actually has to take the crown when she is 18 years old. That's just 5 years. And he realizes he has erred in not teaching her more about compassion and kindness and good manners, and she knows nothing about being a queen, nothing about the kingdom. So he says, okay, there's nothing to do here, but I just have to take her to the summer castle. And it turns out that her birthday is in May, and so May, June, July, and August are the months that they spend at the summer castle. There are two delightful people there at the summer castle named Grandpa Chris and Grandma Polly, and he knows that they will be able to help him get her into shape, raise her to be the woman she needs to be, give him some insight and some guidance, and at the same time provide her with a wonderful experience. Now, the reason he knows this is because they were actually there when he was a little boy. The same two people.
Interesting.
The same way, looking the same, behaving the same, which is rather mysterious.
Mysterious and that's, intriguing.
Yeah, that's just the beginning of the mysterious occurrences at the summer castle.
Mary Louise Gray, who is she and how important is she in the life of Maggie?
Mary Louise Gray is a delightful young woman who I actually sort of, I sort of based her really on my youngest daughter, Melanie, who is a redhead, who is spunky, petite, resilient, always has a smile on her face, but is no pushover by any stretch of the imagination. She's very wise, very savvy. And Maggie meets Mary Louise when she goes to school in Clementine. Now, after the summer castle and meeting Winslow and meeting McTavish and finding some interesting things on the fourth floor of the castle and going through, sitting through the summit meeting, I mean, this is a big deal. She didn't even know that there was such a thing as a summit meeting. And then she realizes, wow, this is a big deal. Well, it changes her life. So when she goes home in September, she can no longer tolerate going to palace school because all the girls are just petty, nasty, vindictive, and all she wants to do is wear overalls and go ride horses. Mm. And she just does not have time for these petty girls. And so she finally convinces her father. She makes so much of a ruckus at school and competes and disagrees so much that her father finally says, okay, all right, you want to go to school outside the palace? Fine. You want to be ordinary? Fine. We'll try it. And he sends her to school in Clementine. And that's where she meets Mary Louise. Now, her identity is protected, or so she thinks, but Mary Louise figures it out immediately because she's very smart, very savvy, but she keeps the secret because it's very important to be loyal to your friends and to keep the secrets that you know are important to be kept. It's very important to keep your mouth shut. And that's one of the things that I think young people, especially teenagers right now in this world that I see with my own two granddaughters who are teenagers and my own daughters, there were times when they would share with me that there were secrets that their friends had.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes the secrets were just fun, silly, I like this boyfriend but don't tell him kind of secrets. But then sometimes they were really serious secrets, like, Mom, she comes to school every day and makes herself throw up.
Mm.
And Mom, she won't eat any lunch. And I really think, you know, and so there becomes that dichotomy of learning, you know, that split in the road. Where do you keep your secrets? And where do you make sure that somebody knows what's going on in the best interest of the person? And so I think that's a big dilemma. And so I explore that with Just Maggie. That's one of the things. Although, honestly, when I set out to write this book, I never thought about it that way.
Well, it's a spectacular book. The illustrations are wonderful. I'm sure that took a great deal of time to get the story and the illustrations to blend together and enhance the adventure. I had mentioned earlier that your book was intended for middle readers, but your audience actually has expanded beyond that, hasn't it?
Yes, I believe, and my husband has said, that there is an adult audience out there, anyone who enjoys adventure and magic and mystery, that all is in the works for Maggie in the future. So please, if you're an adult who enjoys that, go out there and grab it and read it.
The title of the book, again, is Just Maggie. That's two A's, M-A-A-G-Y, Just Maggie. And our author, yep, Virginia Burton Stringer. Virginia, my listeners will need to get a copy of your book. How do they do so?
Well, there are a number of ways. It is on the Barnes & Noble website. It is on the Archway Publishing website. You can simply go there and search for Just Maggie. It is also on Amazon.com. It exists in three forms. There is a paperback form, which is approximately $21.99. There is a hardback form, which is $39.95, and there are digital download opportunities for $3.99. And a lot of people read it on their Kindle, they read it on their iPads, and so it's a very convenient way. But I do encourage people to buy the actual book because it is a beautiful book. It's a beautiful cover, and yes, my illustrator, Lauren Abernathy, just knocked it out of the ballpark. It's actually her very first attempt at illustrating a book, and we sat down and had many long hours of discussion, and then she would turn in something that would just knock my socks off. So she's a very talented young woman, and I hope this is the beginning for her also of a brilliant career in illustrating.
Delightful read, and great for the, again, for middle readers is your target audience.
Yes.
And from what you've described, you have more in the works and soon to come to a bookstore nearby.
Yes, I hope so.
All right. Thank you, Virginia, for joining me today. For Indie Book Publishing, Archway Press, this is J. Douglas Barker.
You're listening to Indie Book Publishing, and we'll be right back after these messages. Join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Helen Wu was born and raised in San Francisco's Chinatown, and after a very difficult upbringing, fighting depression, abuse, and addictions, she finally finds herself genuinely happy inside and out. Helen believes in taking our positive thinking and doing something positive to achieve a positive outcome. She's here to make a positive difference in your life, to be your game changer, your aha moment mentor. She's ready to help both men and women get into a better place. Helen Wu is also the author of Self-Aid Success Stories, 25 Success Stories from Successful Entrepreneurs. Inspired by Ellen DeGeneres, Helen wants the world to know that just because we find ourselves in a difficult situation doesn't mean we have to stay there. We can aid ourselves to a better life. So join us for Self-Aid Success Stories with Helen Wu, Wednesday nights at 10, 9 central on toginet.com. Welcome back to Indie Book Publishing, helping authors publish, promote, and sell their books around the world. Now, back to your host, Steve Jorgensen.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Life Rich Publishing Today. I'm Clint Yates. Boy, we have one that you could almost say comes out of the headlines today, but it's based in an era of the past. Never Left Behind is the book we're going to discuss today, and the author, Jim Miller, joins us on the Life Rich Publishing line today. Hello, Jim. How are you doing today?
I'm doing just fine. Thank you.
Terrific. Well, Never Left Behind. Now, this is not, we were talking a little earlier before we got rolling here that this isn't a sequel, but it is using the same characters from a previous book. So we're kind of learning more and moving on in the life of your characters in this series of books.
That's correct. That's correct. The book that we're talking about, the Never Left Behind book, was started because I wanted to write another story using specific characters from the first book, and it just kind of went from there.
Yeah. We hear these military stories, Jim, and I know this is a common phrase that we hear, never left behind, but you're really talking, we go back to the Vietnam era, of which you are a veteran, and we do sincerely thank you for your service.
You're welcome.
But this is a story that kind of takes that whole idea of never left behind and puts it on paper. Tell us a little bit about the idea behind Never Left Behind.
Well, the deal is that it's the military. I mean, all branches of the military, but specifically the Navy SEALs. Navy SEALs and the Marines especially have this particular ethos where they don't leave teammates behind, wounded, killed, or whatever effort that can be made to try and rescue a person or at least bring back their remains is always taken by these military people. The problem that I've had for going on 50 years now since I came back from Vietnam was the fact that there's always a number of missing in action, and that means that there are things and there are people that are connected to that. It becomes almost trite to see MIA on bumper stickers and so forth. But to me, it's always meant that there's a family who and friends of this person who was missing in action, who have no idea what has happened to this person. Are they alive? Are they dead? If they're alive, where are they? Are they well? If they're dead, how did it happen? How can I get a hold of their remains, et cetera, et cetera. There's no closure involved. That is always something that's bothered me. And that was the primary reason to write this book. Because Navy SEALs are my heroes, and I used them as the vehicle, if you will, to tell the story about how, regardless of the amount of time, regardless of the difficulty involved, et cetera, that you just don't leave a teammate behind, and that's essentially where it came from. That's the story that I wanted to tell, and it wound up telling itself.
Never Left Behind is the name of the book. Jim Miller, the author, is on the Life Rich Publishing line with us today. Now, I found it interesting, you and I were visiting before we started the actual interview, that this book spans itself. You know, when you think of the Left Behind and the POWs, you think of something right now, happening right now. But this spans over several decades, the story that, you know, the loved ones and the search never ended.
That's exactly right. I mean, that was the part that always intrigued me because I was in the intelligence corps when I was in the military, and there has been evidence that has said that people have been left behind. People, for whatever reason, wound up staying behind and never coming home. And it happened certainly in Korea. And that was the story I wanted to tell. And I used a medical issue because I'm a medical person. That's my background. I used that as the way to get the person left behind. They had to be there, but there had to be a reason for them to be there. And the reason was, of course, that the person had total amnesia. And that was really hard to write because I've never had amnesia. And it's really a frightening phenomenon to think about waking up and not knowing anything, literally knowing nothing. There's a line in the book about, like, when the character closed his eyes, you could see this kaleidoscope of words, but at first couldn't put them together. And when he started putting them together, he didn't know what they meant. He had to completely start as, you know, a chronologically 20-year-old man, and start over as an infant would, you know, to learn things a little bit at a time. So, and that's the reason I started the story, because I wanted someone to understand what it might be like for a family or for friends who never gave up on that person, who never, since they didn't get the final word that said that this person was actually killed in action, that the missing in action part of it meant that there was always the potential for this person to be around. And that's the story.
Boy, what a question that could just nag you for, I guess, the rest of your life, for sure.
Absolutely.
Now, your first book using these characters was called Fading Light, and now we have Never Left Behind. It seems, from listening to you talk, these characters, even though these are two really kind of different stories, very different stories, these characters have really gotten your head and have really become these interesting characters that play out different stories in both these books.
Well, yeah, you're right. And see, like I said before, one of the reasons that I wrote the second book was because I like that there's a character in the book, and it's one of the lead characters, and it's his name is D.D. Jenkins. And he was a character that was suggested to me by my son-in-law while I was writing the first book. His wife, my daughter, was one of my primary editors in that book. And, you know, he wanted to have a character in the book, but he also wanted to name him. And so we named him D.D. Jenkins. And the thing is that the character wound up it came into the story about halfway through of Fading Light. But then it took over the story completely. And I just really fell in love with the character, and I wanted to do something with that character. And that's, like I said, that's one of the reasons why I wrote the second book. And it was serendipity that like I was telling, it was actually kind of telling two stories at the same time. I wanted to do something with the Dee Dee Jenkins character and yet, you know, say something about the MIA situation. And it worked out really well, based on the fact that the Dee Dee Jenkins character's father was the best friend of this gentleman who was left behind and never gave up. And then it just got passed down to another generation and like that. So that was a fun part to do.
Boy, it sounds like it. Jim, I know this is a very personal book for you from some of the information that I've read about you. You've already told mm-hmm. us that the SEALs are your heroes, as they are for a lot mm-hmm. of Americans. But also, I know this book was dedicated a lot to the memory of a friend of your family that actually gave his life in service of our country, Adam O. Smith.
That's exactly right. That's correct. Adam O. Smith was a buds mate of my son's. They were in the primary part of SEAL training together in California, and he's from just up the road here from St. Louis, in a little place called Bevere, Missouri. And he died, and he was killed in 2010. And he was, you know, like I said, he was family friend. That's the kid who's been in my house. And he was, you know, one of my son's best friends. And it's just those kinds of things, you know, like I had friends of mine that I went to school with in grammar school and high school and stuff like that, that were killed or wounded in Vietnam. And that's a difficult thing to carry around. I mean, it really is. And that was one of the good parts about this particular, not just this book, but the first one, is that it gave me an opportunity. It was a very cathartic type of thing to be able to get some of that out of my system. You know, at the same time paying homage to, you know, to someone who is a real hero and, you know, who, you know, he died when he was 28 years old. And that's, you know, it was a real tragedy,
yeah.
But the thing with this is he died doing what he wanted to do, protecting our country and stuff like that. So, you know, whatever you can do from an homage point of view, is, you know, that's what I wanted to do. And I did. And as a function of that, when we started selling the book, we decided that we would donate, you know, a percentage of everything that we made from the book to the Wounded Warriors, and that's what we do.
Oh, that's great. Never Left Behind is the name of the book we're talking about today with author Jim Miller. I found it really interesting, Jim, that I don't know if it is because of the amnesia side of the story you were telling us about or how it came about as you were progressing through the book, but you really take a closer look maybe than you were comfortable with the North Vietnamese. Tell me about how that plays a role in Never Left Behind.
Well, you know, it really is. I mean, because I was a very young man. I was 18 years old. Almost 19 when I went to Vietnam. I was as naive as an 18-year-old could possibly be. The big red S on your T-shirt and the whole nine yards. And I came from a very conservative Irish Catholic family and, all my uncles and stuff like that served in the Second World War. The patriotism was just something that we were just inculcated with all of our lives and duty and stuff like that. I mean, there were things that you didn't question about what you were doing. It was just that you were doing it because you were supposed to, it was your duty to do it. And you know, nowadays that's pretty much a punchline, but I mean, back then, you know, like 50 years ago, that meant something. I mean, but the deal is that I had some very strong feelings mm-hmm. about, and still do about, you know, the Vietnam War. And, you know, I mean, the deal was that we're talking about people who are, you know, our enemy, people who would have, you know, if they'd gotten the opportunity, they'd have killed me and vice versa, by the way.
Right.
And, you know, and to that character, you know, the North Vietnamese kid who actually, he was the one who wounded the, that's kind of a spoiler alert, but I mean, it's in the first chapter.
Yeah.
You know, it's trying to write a that person's story was difficult because, first of all, I'm not North Vietnamese. Mm. Second of all, you know, all of the baggage that goes along with trying to write an objective point of view. So, I mean, because you don't want it to be trite and you don't want it to be, you know, too John Wayne-ish about that they're, you know, like they're right. all bad and mm-hmm. we're all good and stuff like that. That there's a humanness, there's a story in there. Okay, and that's what I try to do with the North Vietnamese character is to make him human. And as a function of that, it was pretty cool for me because I was able to get some closure for myself about the war based on trying to put myself into somebody else's shoes. And it worked out pretty well.
Now, this isn't your first venture. Of course, we've talked about Fading Light. You've written a number of books already. Was there anything particularly difficult about this for you? I mean, you've talked about that, or just writing in general as you began. Obviously, you're a veteran, and you've worked in the medical profession, and now you're into writing. What's difficult about penning these kind of books?
What's difficult about it?
Or do you find it difficult, or you just sit down and get after it?
The part that's difficult about writing is that, one, I'm not a marketeer, and two, you know, I'm not a salesman, and three, I'm not an editor, and four, I'm not a proofreader and stuff. I mean, getting ideas on the paper and going through numbers of drafts and stuff and getting it the way that you want it, getting the, you know, the voices that you want and getting the story told the way that you want it told, that's easy. I mean, for me, that is. That's very simple. That's just me sitting down and banging out ideas. That's all it is to it. And then you go back and then you refine the ideas and it gets better and you like it and you keep some stuff and you throw some other stuff out. Mm-hmm. But the really hard stuff mm-hmm. is finding where all the mistakes are. Yeah. And you never do. I mean, you just never do. And that's really frustrating. I mean, it really is because you know that there are things that spell check doesn't catch. There know that there's things in there that you wrote in one draft and thought you took out when you rewrote it, but really didn't. And, you know, and it kind of when, I mean, it's the whole thing back, like, you know, you go back to the old creative writing classes yeah. and stuff like mm-hmm. that, where, you know, like they always told you about, you know, you want to put the person into a literary dream and you don't want to ever wake them up by doing silly things like not spelling words right yeah. or having things in the wrong tense and stuff like that. In other words, it would clang and wake you up. And then, of course, then you're not enjoying the book anymore.
Yeah, you're writing for English class then.
Yeah, I mean, you really are. I mean, yeah. and that's really hard. But, yeah. I mean, as far as, you know, like, it's really weird. I wrote two books about 25 years ago, mm-hmm. and they weren't very good. They traveled quite a bit, but they weren't very good. And the reason that they weren't was because I didn't have any ideas.
Yeah.
I had
mm-hmm.
no ideas. And I just sat down and I wrote the books and lots of words, and there were stories in there, I suppose. But I mean, I had no idea about what I wanted to do. The Fading Light book was one that I had, because of Adam getting killed in 2010, I had been having some problems with, you know, some real rage issues personally, not in an outward sense, but personally rage issues about how unfair it was and how tragic it was and stuff like that. And those ideas they were in dreams and stuff, nightmares and so forth. And, I had given those things a lot of thought. But to be perfectly honest with you, the starting of that book was total serendipity. I was laying about reading a book in November of 2012, and it was a cold gray day, a Thursday in November. You know, I mean, just those four or five words just popped into my head, and I thought, that's pretty good. So I got up and I wrote the book.
Wow.
And to be honest with you, That line didn't make it into the final cut. I mean,
no,
it got started,
no.
But it literally didn't make it into the final cut.
Oh, wow.
But I mean, as far as like the Never Left Behind story was concerned, that was an idea. That was an idea that I had that was, you know, completely full barn and stuff. And I wrote it through one time. And then when I went back to rewrite it, that's when the North Vietnamese character mm-hmm. came in. And that made the story a little bit better, I think. I think it made it a little bit richer. It made it so that it wasn't certainly just one-sided.
Yeah.
It gave folks the opportunity to, you know, make up their own minds about yeah. how they felt about things.
Yeah, that's not easy to do. I don't want this
segment. No, it's not.
We're running out of time almost, Jim. I had another question or two I wanted to ask.
Go ahead.
Without being a spoiler, another spoiler alert, is this the end of the story of D.D. Jenkins and your other characters?
You know, that's a really good question. That is an excellent question because my wife would like for me to write a sequel to Never Left Behind. I won't get into it because that would be a spoiler alert if I told you what it was supposed to be about. But I mean, she would like for me to do it, and maybe one day I will. I don't know. Maybe. But see, the thing that is though is that those first two books were books that I needed. Those were stories I needed to tell. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah.
Whereas the stuff that I've written, the four books that I've written since, I've written a Civil War book. It's a, you know, it's a historical fiction. And I just finished that last week. And three murder mysteries and stuff. Those are books that I'm writing for fun. I mean, because I just like writing. And I have these ideas, so I just put them down. But those first two books, those were stories that needed to be told. Okay, regardless of the characters. The stories were inside, and they had to come outside. And now they're out. You know, I don't know that I'm as interested in it as I used to be. I have a good friend of mine, having just said that, I have to backtrack. I have a good friend of mine who flew B-52s during the latter part of the Vietnam War. And I'm trying to coerce him into telling me his stories and stuff like that, because I really like to do something about that.
Wow.
Other than that, I mean, you know, I can write murder mysteries forever. so, you know.
Three of those. You got three of those going, right?
I have three of them that are finished. I have one that's in a local publisher right now. I probably shouldn't have said that, but that's too bad. you know, but I mean, it just is what it is. I mean, they're just, you see, I don't, and I know this is going to sound odd, but I mean, I don't write books to sell them necessarily. I mean, that's kind of almost, I don't know. Some people, I figure, it's necessary. It's a necessary evolvement, if you will, of the craft.
Right.
But I don't look at it that way. I really don't. I mean, if I'd like for people to read the book, I'd like for people to enjoy it. It's, you know, it's sold a whole bunch of copies and stuff like that. That'd be okay. I mean, I really don't have any trouble with it. But I mean, it's more about the stories themselves, you know, and whether or not people read them and enjoy them. The business part of it is. I leave that to other people.
Yeah. Again, the name of the book we're talking about today is Never Left Behind by author Jim Miller. Now, Jim, you were telling me earlier you didn't have a website or anything, but you're very active on Facebook. Tell us about that, how people can learn more about you, about maybe Fading Light or some of these other books that you have going
well,
on.
Well, I mean, what I use Facebook for is because, you know, like, the whole idea is to while I'm doing this, I have to give a shout out to my St. Charles CrossFit pals and friends and stuff. I promise them I'd do that. Because, you know, like it's the purpose of this ever expanding base of friends. The more people that you know, the more people that you're friendly with, the more people that you converse with and stuff like that, they become a potential audience. It's like I was saying before, is that for subsequent books, what I use Facebook for, and somewhat successfully so far, too, by the way, is I look for beta readers, for people who enjoy a genre. There's a lady in Connecticut right now, as a matter of fact, who has a draft of one of my murder mysteries because she's into that type of thing and, you know, and wanted to read it. And it's very, to me, it's important to have, you know, the beta reader opinion, because there's no real point in trying to market something if, you know, like the people who really normally read that type of book think it was terrible, you know? So, that's what I use it for. I do. It's an expanding market. It's, you know, as many friends as you can get, you know, when they know who you are and you know what you do and stuff, if they have the interest, they can always get a hold of you and inquire about how to get a hold of the book and so forth and so on. And that's happened a number of times.
Oh, terrific. Thanks, Jim. One last thing. You mentioned it before we go. Tell us where, if someone, I think they would, after our conversation today, would like to pick up a copy of Fading Light and Never Left Behind, if they haven't had a chance to read it. Where do they find the book?
And to be on the lookout for the Nerviati murder mysteries, too, by the way. But no, both books, you can find both books on, well, there are a number. There's just a whole bunch of websites. But primarily it's at Barnes & Noble and it's at Amazon. You can get it's available in hardback and soft cover at Barnes & Noble, and it's available on soft cover and what's in ebooks in both of those places as well. And then one of the other things that I recommend people do is they if they look the book up using the title and my name, you can come up with the ISBN number. Mm-hmm. And what the ISBN number will allow you to do is to go back to the internet, and that opens up all of the different websites, and there's supposedly hundreds of them, that sell books, not just in the United States, but internationally. And then you can, you know, you can look the book up. You can do that from a bunch of different points of view. You can do it from a price point issue. You can make your own deals and so forth and so on. The other thing is that I tell people is it, like especially around here when I hand out cards and so forth with my email address on it and my telephone number, that when people buy the book, if they contact me, then I will find them and I'll sign it for them. And that's kind of fun.
Yeah, wow.
But that's what it is.
Terrific. Again, the name of the book is Never Left Behind. The author, Jim Miller, also a Vietnam veteran. Thank you so much for being with us today on the Life Rich Publishing Line, Jim. And again, thank you for your service and for writing about some of the true heroes in our country.
One last thing, sorry, before you go, please include the fact that any of the proceeds that I get from this book, a percentage of them goes to the Wounded Warriors.
All right, that's terrific. Thanks, Jim, and thanks for being with us today.
You've been listening to Indie Book Publishing with your host, Steve Jorgensen. Join us again next week at noon Eastern as Steve interviews another great author.